Right.
When we left off last time,
didn't we already do this song?
That was when we laughed off last time.
We
laughed off and left off last time with Love Story. Between you and me, we met. Major event in marathon history. Without that meeting, I wouldn't be here today. I probably would be at home with my wife and kids, who hate me now because I'm here.
I don't remember anything about the last one we talked about. Was it about movies?
It started out like that, and then it got into you criticizing me for my definition of fired versus let go.
That's right. You're fired!
It turned into Kevin's semantics corner.
And Joe defending his semantics corner.
My semantics are always impeccable.
For those who don't remember.
Perfect.
I was fired. Oh, but I think fired means this, and really it's not that. Okay, yeah, you're kind of right, but I was fired.
You're so easy. I can just bait you into it. And I called you a tabloid journalist.
That's okay.
I said it laughingly.
Trust me, I've been called a lot worse.
I did say it laughingly.
I've been called a lot worse in bed and out of bed. I was called a tabloid journalist in bed once. Mm. Trump was not happy.
So some of you out there are hoping we actually talk about something today.
No, you're not.
Nah, I don't know. You probably put this on to go to bed to, or to fall asleep to, or both. I don't know. It's marathon chat number 15.
This marathon chat.
And I'm doing the Picard
we...
face again. God, I can't. I just fall into it when I have to recite.
Jeez. And I'm the one drinking
you're
wine.
The one drinking
here.
Wine.
Jesus, man.
It is marathon chat.
It was chat, yeah.
15.
Do you like how I got the picture of Joe Bob on that?
That was nice.
Yes.
Yeah. So, by the way, if you're behind on these things or you're tuning in for the first time, you can find, I believe, can you find all the marathon chats on your website still?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
FatGuysAtTheMovies.com, correct?
That's correct.
If you go to the FatGuysAtTheMovies.com website, you can find all 14 of the previous marathon chats. You could do your own 24-hour marathon of marathon chats. You could just sit
that's
in your
true.
Basement all day.
And that's just with, like, the first two episodes.
Yeah, and just kind of zone out and see the eye of God by listening to our voices talk about bullshit. So anywho, the format, if you're tuning in for the first time, once again, is we are doing a oral history of the Columbus Marathon, specifically the ones of the Drexel lineage. We also had the ones that I helped to organize, the Studio 35 24-hour horror marathons, and some all-nighters and some other hoo-ha and things like that.
Hoo-ah.
Yeah, hoo-ah! And Kevin and I are talking about our recollections of them. And hopefully... through this, we are kind of condensing, or we are kind of not condensing.
We're not condensing.
Collecting,
shit,
collecting.
God.
I was close. I had some of the letters right.
My
collecting.
God. Are you sure that's water in your glass and not just gin?
It's late in the day, man. Late in the day.
It's 5
yeah,
somewhere.
Let me tell you a secret. We're collecting all these marathon stories, some of which we've told before.
Yeah.
But we're hoping to put them all in one spot for your entertainment or pity.
Mm.
One of the two. This is actually the latest we've recorded one of these in quite a long time. Way, 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 way back in the olden days, when I would visit the magical studio in the sky, we would record late at night, like 11:30 midnight.
Yeah.
And we'd huddle and Kevin, and I'm sorry, in the basement of the magical studio in the sky.
Yes. We'd huddle in Kevin.
Hovering.
We'd
huddle
stopped.
Inside Kevin like a wampa.
And boy, did it hurt.
And it did hurt a lot. And we'd hover over one microphone and just talk and talk and talk. We've evolved since then. We try to record earlier in the day so we can all go to sleep at like 7 o'clock, get our beauty rest. But today we're a little later, so if we're a little punchy...
It doesn't matter. They're just listening.
Kevin's
may be listening to this at 7 o'clock.
Drinking some wine. I'm drinking some water. Freebasing. I mean, eating some chocolate. So today,
yes.
Today, we're going to switch things up a little bit, and in the name of continuity, we are going to talk today about the Arena Grand years of the science fiction marathon.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tuning in and you want to hear about the horror marathon in 2002 and 2003 at Studio 35, that's next time. Such a monumentous 2-year stretch that was. We want to give it its own episode.
Yeah.
And we figured the Arena Grand years are their own entity, so we would kind of roll into those today. Mm. So, I don't know. Where do you want to start with the Arena Grand?
How about the first one?
That's a good idea. I like that. So
the originally it was supposed to the Drexel marathons were supposed to migrate to the Arena Grand from with because they'd gone to the Rife Center. They were supposed to migrate to the Arena Grand. It took a little longer for it to get
the backstory.
Finished, right?
Yeah, the backstory from what I understand is for a long time the Franks, Jeff and Kathy, who owned and operated the Drexel for a good 25 plus years. Especially after the Drexel North was gone, they were left with the Drexel and the Drexel Grandview. And for a long time, they had plans where they wanted to open up another theater, ideally downtown, just kind of, you know, get back to a more of a very centrally located classical theater feel.
Yeah.
I saw back to
the old days when the big theaters were downtown, it was an event.
And Jeff got his start working for, I believe, the Ohio Theater and helping to program the film series there. So I think there was always a desire, especially with I hesitate to say the Drexel brand, I hate that term, but the Drexel identity at that point, for the longest time, had been a very classically inclined type identity, even though the Drexel, especially when the North was still in operation, had the reputation for showing controversial things and cutting-edge things.
Yeah.
There was always a very heavy foundation of the classic movie-going experience, hence the Art Deco look of the Drexel, the way it still was.
Mm-hmm.
So for a long time, I believe I saw some of the preliminary paperwork and offers behind other ventures that didn't actually go down, but there was a plan to try to partner the Drexel up with somebody, some big entity, to create a theater downtown. So I think it was around 2000 that they finally partnered up with Nationwide to create what would become the Arena Grand Theater. And it was originally supposed to open in 2001. Construction and completion of the theater was delayed, so there was no Sci-Fi Marathon in 2001, only the Trailer-Thon at the Grandview in the spring. But by spring 2002, the Arena Grand was open. And that's when they finally held SF19, which is the one we're going to kick things off with today.
And at the time, even though there was stadium seating, there wasn't these dream loungers type thing that are very popular now. So like the nicest seats you'd have were if you're locally at the Lennox would be like the nicest seats they had.
Yeah.
But they also had like a in the Arena Grand, they had a little, they've changed the theaters a bit, but they had a little, like, basically a screening room.
Oh yeah.
All reserved seats.
I saw Apocalypse Now in that room.
Very tiny. I saw Australia. They did a press screening of Australia.
Which is crazy to see like a big epic movies like that in a room like that.
Well, you know? Yeah. And you're like, 7 feet from the screen, and you can see the dots. You can see the perforations on the screen.
Yeah.
They also, one of the other things I believe at the time, the Arena Grand was the only THX certified theater.
Ooh, wait, let me think.
In town, when it opened, it was. I don't know what happened afterwards.
I believe. Okay, if that's a tough one, because
I
remember the Marcus Cineplexes, the Pickerington and the Crosswoods. I thought they had THX certification at one point. Did they not have THX? Yeah, they did.
They did at one point, but the thing is, and it was explained to me because I was actually a member of I was writing for the Newark Advocate and the Lancaster Eagle Gazette at the time, and I went out there for a tour of it, and they took me and a couple of other journalists in and gave us a tour of the whole thing, and I think there's a different classification. You can have a THX theater, but this was one that actually was designed and calibrated by THX.
That would be different because they could get certification for the Marcus Theaters, but they were already built.
Yes.
It's a minor difference from anybody. And which is weird talking about it today because I don't know of any theaters
now
in town, let alone anywhere where they trump up a THX certification.
Not anymore.
Or if they even do it anymore.
No. But they did, but that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And I remember going in there and they showed us the original trailer for Ice Age with Scrat, the little saber-toothed squirrel. And it's where he's taking the nut and he's going down a glacier and there's like an avalanche and the glacier's falling on top of him. And they played it because you hear all the sounds from the real tiny sounds all over. And it was a fantastically calibrated theater. I mean, I've been there since and I know they've done changes, and obviously it's a dining theater now, and the seats are very different. But it was a real solid attempt to go back to a classic, high quality.
Correct
theater.
Me if I'm wrong, but
which I always do.
Well, you do, yeah. Wasn't one of the selling points for the Arena Grand the French leather seats?
But they didn't have them in all theaters.
No, but they trumpeted the fact that they had French leather seats, right?
Yeah.
I remember the French part of that because we always laughed like French leather seats, like, well, hey, you know, like leather's not good enough. We need French leather.
You know, sort of like with Mr. Rourke talking about Corinthian leather.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too with the Arena Grand,
because they had the balcony, and the best seat in the house was seat 5, front seat of the balcony, first middle seat of the balcony in theater 5, which was fantastic.
Yeah,
but yeah, they had them. They had reserved seats, which was one of the first times they did that in Columbus.
Yes,
they had reserved seats in the leather, in the French leather seats.
It's weird. It was like oddly enough, even though that theater has changed a lot, and even though I don't know that it was like a huge success in its time when it was first built, like they thought it would be.
Yeah,
it became a predicator of what a lot of modern theater going has turned into.
Mm-hmm.
Reserved seating, more lush chairs, concessions that are more high end.
Yeah.
It's interesting in the span of Columbus.
Yeah, they were one of the first ones aside from like Studio 35 that had an active bar there.
Yeah.
Because this predated the Gateway even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting in the span of the Columbus history of cineplexes and theaters. In the late 90s, you get that big multiplex boom that's going on everywhere. And that's when the Lennox is built. That's when Marcus comes into town. That's when Regal comes into town. And you get that 3 or 4 year stretch where there's a glut of new screens.
Yeah.
And when the Arena Grand came in, you were starting to get right near the end of that cycle. Mm-hmm. So the Arena Grand, the whole point they were trying to do was, okay, well, it's another multiplex, but we're going to do something special with it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I mean, I think I only saw maybe 3 or 4 movies outside of a marathon there in the span of when it was around, but they were always generally pretty good. Although there was one screening that drove me nuts. I went to see Catch Me If You Can on Christmas Day in 2002 or 2002. And I had seen the trailers that were playing before Catch Me If You Can at a Marcus Theater the week before.
Yeah.
And I realized they were off pitch. They were pitched like just like a half step higher than they should be. And it drove me nuts. And I walked out of the theater.
Marcus.
No. At Arena Grand.
Oh, really?
This drove me nuts. And I knew there was something wrong with the sound, but no one would say anything. I felt terrible because I had taken a friend of mine on Christmas Day to see this. And I just told him, look, watch the movie. It's fine. This is going to drive me nuts.
Yeah.
It was one of those weird, like, hyper little OCD moments I have sometimes. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Some of you will laugh at that. Some of you will laugh even more. Years later, I had it confirmed for me that for a brief period of time, the way that the projector was running was just that much faster than it should have been, and it pitched the sound up a half step. But that was the only time I ever had any real complaints about that, except...
Was that on purpose? Because I remember reading a thing once in the 70s where some theaters in town, I think it was in Columbus, got in trouble because there were... That was when, like, Star Wars and the Close Encounters were big movies, and they weren't long movies. So they ran them slightly faster so they could actually fit in that extra show.
I can neither confirm nor deny if that was actually the case. Okay. I heard rumors that there might have been a little bit of that, but now I'm going to start some internet meme or rumor mill or something. I take back what I said. There was one other time that I had complaints about the projection, and that happened at one of the marathons, but we'll get to that soon today. So
the only other thing that I would think would be worth mentioning about the Arena Grand is, I think one of the reasons it had trouble, why it struggled as a movie theater, is because there was a stretch of time, like in 2005-ish, that they did like all of their screenings, all the press screenings were at the Grand.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were in that little tiny room. And it was mid to late 2000s. And that was fantastic, but I think one of the problem was nobody went downtown for the movies during the day.
Yeah.
So there was no business there.
Yeah.
And then at night, everyone leaves downtown.
That was the big problem at that point. It was.
And what ends up happening is then what it does is it draws from the ghetto, in particular the East
ghetto. Whoa, here we go. Uh-oh.
Oh, no. I'm just saying that neighborhood. What?
In the ghetto.
I'm just saying, if you were to go down, Broad Street and go east out of downtown Columbus.
Looking to see a film tonight. Where you gonna go to the Arena Grand from the ghetto?
Well, that was the closest theater to that area.
From the ghetto,
and that is not a good neighborhood. And I went and saw on Christmas Day. I went and saw Alien vs. Predator, Requiem, and I thought I was gonna get stabbed because there were people fighting and yelling at each other. I mean, it was crazy in that.
I'm gonna quote Lawrence Fishburne from the long lost Martin Sheen directed film.
Yes.
Cadence, starring his son Charlie Sheen, available somewhere worth seeing. I'm going to quote Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah.
Looking mighty white, Slim. Looking
oh, you're bringing race white into this?
There we go. Yeah,
I'm just saying, it was a loud, rambunctious crowd.
The moral of the story, see Cadence. It's actually not that bad. The other Estevez kid is in there too, Ramon. No.
But I think that was one of the problems is it was not a local theater to anybody.
I think their hope.
And then what happened is they opened up, because they already had the arena. It was supposed to draw from the arena, but then they opened up the LC Pavilion.
Yes.
Which used to be Promo West Pavilion. It was the name. And then they opened up Huntington Park, and then it just became unmanageable to go. Nobody wanted to go there for a movie because it was such a pain in the keister to park when you could
go to Lenox. Well, this in the infamous other paper article about the Drexel and Studio 35, I remember my old boss, John, he kind of took the gloves off for the first time, and he said he thought the Arena Grand was the most ludicrous thing he'd ever heard of. And I still agree with some of his points, and you've mentioned them too, which are if you're some suburban mom, dad, whoever, and it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon and you're living in Pickerington and you want to take your kid to see the new Harry Potter movie, you're not going to drive downtown to see it. Yeah. You'll go to the multi. That was the problem of the multiplex boom and the glut of screens was anyone in a suburb could go to at least a serviceable theater in their suburb to see most of the films that ended up still playing at the Arena Grand.
Well, I like how you characterize that as a problem. I consider that a huge asset that we didn't have to haul our butt all the way.
No. The problem for the Arena Grand. Not for people.
For society. It was really nice when they opened up. I remember when they opened up, it was Cinemark, which is now a Movie Tavern, which is down the road from where I grew up. I mean, it was really close to where I grew up.
Yeah.
And that was really nice because I didn't have to go up into Dublin to go to the Dublin or Westland or something like that.
The problem for the Arena Grand was that. And they were taking kind of a leap into the unknown, I think, and their thought was the Drexel name, the Nationwide name, and the air of prestige hopefully will combine with the new Arena District and make this a happening thing.
Well, that was the whole thing. They were trying to build up the Arena District.
And it didn't quite happen as readily as they thought it might.
Yeah, I mean, it works as some restaurants and stuff, but it still had so much of competition for the Short North.
I think the one thing that could have made it work more is if they had more unique or more programming unique to the Arena Grand. And they kind of always had a minor mix of that, but most of what they showed was still the regular big budget films.
Yeah, it was the main.
And like when Apocalypse Now came into town with the Redux re-release, I saw it at the Arena Grand.
Yeah.
In their smallest screen, which is strange. Yeah. Seeing it in the smallest screen because it's great,
it's like the biggest screen you're ever going to see though because you're so close.
I was in the back row. So
I've been in the back row. It's still pretty damn big from the back row.
But aside from that, in the marathons, a lot of what they did was the same basic thing you could see anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of doom part of it long-term.
There wasn't much differentiating it.
No, and I think the
it wasn't like what the Gateway does now, where the Gateway, they'll have the big movies, but there's a ton of specialty programming.
I think the original philosophy was Drexel plus Nationwide will be the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I think the Drexel part of the equation was weakened a bit as it went along and was not as prominent as you thought.
But because all the Drexel movies all played out at Bexley anyways.
Yeah, or at Grandview at that point, too.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an odd combination.
Yeah.
Fairly nice theater, though, in its time. I haven't been back since they redid it, so I can't talk about that.
It's okay. I mean, it's a nice theater, but it's still a downtown theater that shows stuff. It has, let's put it this way, the big thing that differentiates it is the menu. Yeah. I've not been to the Dine-In Theater at Easton, but I've been to the Movie Tavern, and it's better than the Movie Tavern.
With all this preamble and context, you have to understand, there were a lot of people in the marathon crowd that were really excited about having the Arena Grand as what they were told to be at that point, or what they were told at that point was going to be the new
home.
Permanent home for the marathons, because the Drexel North closes in 1996. You get 3 years of the Rife Center where you can't bring food in, so even though you have a pretty good space, you're very limited in that way. Then you get the continent, then you get the grand view, and now all of a sudden the pitch is, wow, we're going to have this pretty big. I think the main screen at the Arena Grand might have held, what, 400 to 500?
Probably 400 to 500. That sounds
about right. 400 to 500 balcony, expanded menu, gourmet stuff, THX projection sound.
Nice seats.
Nice seats. All that stuff, yeah. And a lot of people got really, really excited for that. And for 3 years, it seemed to serve things pretty well. I remember writing this blistering rant about this on one of the message boards once. I probably have it pulled up somewhere. Here's a little context for you if you'd like to kind of do your play-at-home version after you listen to this. If you go on
for
to...
For those user listeners at home.
If you go on to scifimarathon.com or horrormarathon.com and you click on the forum link, if you go into the section that is called The Cantina, that's all the Sci-Fi Marathon discussions. I have stickied a post that says, set the Wayback Machine for ...2002. And on there, there are four links to archive.org, and it's a bunch of posts from the old, old Drexel.net message board, which has been inactive for a long, long time. But around this time, around the time of the first Arena Grand Marathon, was when the Drexel.net message board really became a prominent forum for people to talk about the marathons.
Because this didn't exist yet, sci-fi. Marathon.com did it.
SciFiMarathon.com did not exist yet. It was on the verge of existing about 2 or 3 years later. The forum that you might know from SciFiMarathon.com/HorrorMarathon.com today, all that action took place at Drexel.net on their forum.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
In 10, 15 years, when we're still doing this and we sit down and revisit marathon history, are we going to link to the archive.org of the sci-fi marathon
which will
topic
then link to
that,
the
that links back to the archive.
I can only hope so. Yeah.
Then the world would explode.
We will be doing this on Twitter in 10 years, so no, there'll be won't. No live thought, please. We'll be doing this on Snapchat in 10 years. Or,
yeah,
or Yik. We'll be doing this on Yik Yak. We won't even see each other.
Yik Yak? What the hell is a Yik Yak?
You don't know what Yik Yak is? You're not up with
how
the
do you know what a Yik Yak is?
I have my finger on the pulse of teenage America.
Your finger on something
and I am...
And I can say that
and
now.
I am drawing the blood out as much as I can. Trust me. I am on one of these old links to the old Drexel.net film forum. And somewhere in here, I remember someone was talking about the Arena Grand and how great it was. And I remember I posted this like mini scathing rant saying, look, all of you are saying the marathon will all of a sudden be fixed permanently as long as we get to the Arena Grand. And I said, look, the Drexel North isn't walking back to that door anytime soon. The marathon has to be the marathon despite the theater. Mm. I kind of agree with what I said back then. I still think the venue matters. If you have a terrible theater, it's going to affect the experience no matter what. The Rife Center with no food, that affected the experience no matter what.
Yeah.
I think looking back, I think a decent chunk of people looked at the Arena Grand as being the one thing that would really propel things forward no matter what. My part of my argument still stands, and that is you have to have the lineup, you have to have the features, you have to have the things that actually happen in the theater. Mm. Because if the theater is great and the marathon's not that great, the marathon is not going to last.
Yeah.
How that worked its way out, you know, we'll talk about that. But this also, for those of you who are completely new to the experience, this was way before I became heavily involved with the Sci-Fi Marathon. Mm. So I was still, even though I was good friends with Bruce and we kind of worked together and I was an informal advisor, I was just part of the crowd back then, even though I knew a lot of what went on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you're going to get a lot of salacious stories today, but if I can make one up off the top of my head, I will.
Well, let's talk about this.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the first one. The
yes.
19th Annual 24-Hour Ohio Science Fiction Marathon. Is this when they finally started calling it Ohio Science Fiction Marathon? Or
I think this might be where the Ohio Sci-Fi Marathon first came in, which might... No, I take that back.
That was the Rife Center.
Okay. Rife Center because it came from the Drexel North before
that. That's right, okay.
And they wanted to take away the location-specific name. And the attempt to brand it...
Which was way too prophetic.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll notice, Shock Around the Clock, when we renamed the Horror Marathon that's nice and non-specific. You can take that wherever you want to.
Until they get rid of clocks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Obama.
Shock Around the Stylus. Shock Around the Pile of Mud. Yeah, or that too. We'll get to that eventually.
Got his pulse on teenage America.
Okay.
Christ. So
Yeah. Well, and there was an attempt to rename it the Ohio Science Fiction Marathon, even though that might piss some people in Cleveland off, but too bad. Too bad, Cleveland.
That's right.
They're going to lynch me the next time I get up there. God.
Mighty white.
Now, yeah, I know. We both are.
All right.
So, okay, you have to look at the flyer for this one, though, first, right, because there are significant changes that happen between the flyer and between the final lineup. And
like
is,
the giant picture of Maria.
Yeah,
from
boy, this is talk about a marathon that will live in infamy for some reasons. If you look on scifimarathon.com, you will find in the archive section flyers, pictures, other things for just about every marathon we've had. Mm-hmm. If you look at the flyer for the Sci-Fi Marathon, you'll notice that prominently featured on the front of the flyer is the robot Maria from Metropolis. And advertised is the, at that point, most complete restoration of Metropolis from Kino, which was like 2 hours and 15 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous restoration. And the original plan was to show that. And they were fairly certain they were going to get that at that point. And so when Bruce made the flyer, he's got a huge... huge picture of the robot Maria towering over the Arena Grand, and not that long after the flyer came out, word came down that they could not get Metropolis.
Wow.
I think this might be unprecedented in marathon history before and after, that the artwork featured on the flyer is so prominent and the film doesn't actually show. Well, you didn't listen to all the words I said.
Which is not completely a surprise
for a tabloid journalist.
Whatever.
Said the art.
You've
the
been
art,
saying so many
the
words
art,
so far.
The yes. art. Note, you'll say the art. All of you out there in podcast land can rewind. The art is featured. There was almost no MST3K art on the flyer.
That's not true. No, there was
on
tons
the
of
flyer.
It.
No. Oh, yeah. I'll put the bet down. There was a globe on the back of the flyer and the name of the film on the front.
Mike and the Robots, small
on the bottom of that. But the major art on that flyer was Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet because it was a riff off of the flyer for Sci-Fi Marathon number one. That's a big, big difference between having the robot Maria take up almost half of the front of the flyer on this one.
Yeah.
Just admit you're wrong. It's okay.
No, I'm pretty sure it's okay. I remember the flyer, and I remember the flyer was pretty prominent.
Oh, it's too bad we don't have this thing called the internet right in front of us to actually prove who might be right.
Well, I'm not saying... No.
All of you
I
mean, out there are so bored right now with this pissing
here's
contest
the thing
we're going
with Maria. You see Maria, but you know what? If you cover her down tits below... it could be anything. It's Maria's face. It's right at the top, which is about, I believe, where the globe was for MST.
Actually. What?
So tell me, where am I? How did you solve a problem like Maria?
I think half the audience is tuned out now. They're like, God, not
they're,
another
they're
pissing
like, we're
contest
not even talking about
these guys. Yeah, jeez.
And here he goes. He's,
just keep talking. Just keep talking. Come on, keep going. So you okay? Why don't we start this?
Okay.
Metropolis did not happen.
No.
While I'm looking up this stupid bit of information, why don't you tell your personal connection with Sci-Fi number 19?
Oh yeah, around this time in the early 2000s, I was doing filmmaking, and we had shot a bunch of things. I shot a mockumentary, and actually, I'd shown a trailer, like a fake trailer for something I was working on at another one of the earlier studio marathons. And,
right at the bottom, boy.
Right at the last, like, tenth of the flyer.
Boy.
Guess what pops?
Right there. You just changed the subject.
So you
went from talking about the top of the fold of this flyer with the robot Maria's head and saying the globe was up there when it's really not.
May I also direct you to what's on the right side of the picture?
The alien from this island Earth, which is not advertised to show at that marathon?
Which is... part of the Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie. That's the movie they're riffing. Hate to tell you.
I think you're wrong still.
With what?
Life in general.
Suck it. Anyways.
I'm going to walk off this podcast right now. You can just talk to yourself for the rest of the event.
Yes,
come on. We're like 25 minutes in.
All right. So
we got to. Yeah.
Oh, no. We're like 30 minutes in. You started that too late. Anyways. So I was making films. And so we did the short film called Ghost Reader, and we wanted to exhibit it. And there was digital projection capabilities here because, of course, you were showing stuff like Cadavra, The Lost Skeleton of Cadavra, which I believe was not a print. Am I right? Yeah, I'm right.
I think you're right, yeah.
So there were, it did have digital projection capabilities, and I had contacted you. I know I contacted Bruce, and Bruce had allowed us, and we were going to show it. And it was a short film called Ghost Reader about this future where I'd written it, and it was a story I'd had published in a magazine called Pirate Writings, which is now defunct, but it was out. It was a sort of a prose, semi-prozine.
Much like your writing career.
Magazine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And until I write the book about the marathons, ghostwritten by you.
That'll sell a lot, let me tell you.
So we showed it, and my sister had directed it. It was based on a story I wrote, and my sister had directed it. Went over pretty well. She did, admittedly, she did not know how to handle a crowd. So she
I don't even remember that. Wow.
She botched her speech to it, like, badly, because I think she just got nervous. But it went well, and actually I ran into a guy a while later, and he actually was like, oh yeah, you directed that. You wrote that. You guys did that movie. That was really cool. So it was kind of neat. And it actually shows up, and you're showing me video footage from this marathon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it actually shows up, and it has her botching her speech in the middle of the video footage.
I'm going to go home and watch that tonight.
She was trying to reference some other like short film or a bit that was done beforehand. And she was trying to make a joke, and it just did not play. The joke she said about which we just watched, which was sort of goofy. So
price of trying to tame that fickle.
We were young and immature and stupid.
Young, dumb, and
but it was neat. We showed it, and it was a neat little thing. It was a neat. I think we showed it actually before the Lost Skeleton of Cadaver because of the video projection had to be set up for it. That's my connection.
I thought Ghost Reader showed earlier in the day.
Did it?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't remember.
Because I was like half out of the theater from Gamera 3 to Lost Skeleton, and I remember seeing Ghost Reader and Kelly.
Oh, okay.
Please, they gave you a nice prime spot.
They were really cool, and it was, well, because at the time, it was neat to get short films, because at the time, it wasn't, video was not digital, and now anybody can make a short film, and it may not be good, but anybody can make a short film and edit together on a home computer. It's not hard. Back then, you had to have, even back then, it was right when digital video was in its infancy, and I don't even think YouTube existed at the time.
No, not yet.
So people, it was still hard to find these things, so it was kind of neat to have a little premiere type thing.
When I taught film courses in high school during my illustrious career as a pedagogue, I used to tell the kids all the time, look, know what the that stuff means, you get on your computer for free these days, like especially if you get something like iMovie,
yeah.
I said, God, that's 100 times better than what I had. And even at that point, because 2002 is when you showed this, you know, 4 or 5 years later, getting something like iMovie for free on a Mac was like leagues better than any of the stuff you could have for that cheap at that point.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of an accomplishment to make something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, it was neat. It was a neat experience, and it was such a nice theater to see it in, and it had a great audience reaction to it.
Yeah. Now, if you look at the original lineup that's pitched on the flyer, you've got the 50th anniversary of the day the Earth stood still.
Yeah.
When Worlds Collide, which I believe was also a 50th anniversary. Those mm-hmm. two ended up showing. Metropolis, which had to be dropped. Mm-hmm. Then, and this is an interesting byproduct of the Arena Grand, when I taught, we used to talk about form equals content all the time. Mm-hmm. The way something is told inevitably, invariably, inalienably shapes what it is. And there was a drive to show several more recent films that had digital sound. So The Matrix, Cube, and Robert Zemeckis' Contact were all advertised as about to be shown, specifically, according to the flyer, to savor the Arena Grand 60-foot screen and THX-certified Dolby digital sound. More on that in a second. We also had THX 1138 advertised. That did show. There's a good story behind that, a painful story, but a good one nonetheless. But the showing the recent films, this was like a very interesting, somewhat recent development in marathon history at that point. The last marathon before that, the one at Grandview in 2000, had Fifth Element, Men in Black, a couple of the more recent films. Mm-hmm. When this lineup was announced, initially, the first 7 films that were announced that were definite, the power of the internet reared its ugly, ugly little head. And I took part in this too, because on the Drexel.net message board, my good friend, Steve Carter, started a thread Steve will love this that I'm saying this. And you can find this on one of the links on scifimarathon.com.
Yeah.
And the thread is called If You Had to Ditch One Movie. And Carter argues we should drop Contact for several reasons. Then someone else says, yes, we should drop Contact. Then, let's see, a couple other people suggest we should drop Contact. And then this guy named Joe Neff gets on. I don't know who this guy is. And says, okay, toss my head into the Ditch Contact cartel. I actually liked Contact when I saw it in first run, but then again, I also liked The Fifth Element when I saw it in first run, and I really didn't want to sit through it at the last marathon. I'm with most of you in thinking that Contact is a bit too long and meditative for this lineup, which makes me sound like a real pretentious
Which makes you
prick.
Basically say douchebag.
It's a little,
maybe
it's a little, you know.
You just didn't get it.
Now, I.
Maybe you should have read the book beforehand.
You will notice I say I'm with most of you in thinking that. So I'm kind of trying to draw everybody else into my amazing intellectual
ways. This is the sociopathy. This is how I was trying to manipulate the audience. Meh.
I'm just.
Apparently, sociopaths make that in voice with the.
I'm gonna quote our pal Tim Martin. Who we called Fredo on one podcast again, and he corrected me. Tim says, I simply fail to see how Contact is even remotely considered sci-fi, just because they happen to talk, and talk is in quotation marks, a lot about aliens from outer space does not make it sci-fi. If anything, it was a political film.
Can I ask
So
Tim
if you're still
directly.
Mad today, though, I know somewhere out there, there's someone who went to this marathon,
what is
showed up, and then they said, where's Contact? I bought a ticket to see Contact. Hunt down Tim Martin, because Tim Martin is the one who really, really drove us to say it's not even a sci-fi film.
Why? I have to, next time I see Tim, I have to ask him why talk is in quotes.
I don't know.
Because did they sign language? I mean,
I don't know.
Putting it in quotes implies that they didn't actually talk.
Tim's going to come to my house now.
Is this
going to
be like Wally? Wally's like, we're talked, but it didn't really talk English or. And also, it is a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. I mean, you know what? This is a great way, because this is a debate. And it's always a debate about horror.
Yeah.
Is this a horror movie or not?
Yeah.
And I've heard you always define horror as saying it should somehow unnerve you. That can be a definition of horror,
in a lot
which
of ways.
Is why
yeah.
you know stuff that a lot of people say. Well, it's not horror; that's more crime. You'd be like, well, that is horror because it's unnerving.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Schmidt, who used to edit Analog Magazine, which used to be Astounding Science Fiction, he defined and he had a great definition for science fiction. He said, if it's a science fiction story, because of course he was talking about stories in the magazine, but you can apply it to movies. If there's a scientific element in there, and you remove it from the movie or remove it from the story, and the story collapses or ceases to exist, then it's science fiction. So something like Frankenstein can be defined, even though it's a traditionally a horror movie, it's a science fiction because the science of medically reanimating a dead body.
Yeah.
You remove that, you have no story.
That's interesting.
And I always have found that as a neat way of defining science fiction. Now, if you use that for it absolutely is, because everything this movie's about is about this signal from outer space and potentially traveling to the stars. If you remove that science element, you just have Jodie Foster banging some religious dude down in Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jake Busey's teeth.
Jake Busey, I forgot about that. Yeah. I haven't seen Contact in a long time. And here's the odd thing. I know that Contact was pulled from the lineup after it was announced, mainly because there were complaints on the message board.
Witness the origin of outrage culture.
Yeah. You can go back and leer at it. Actually, the message board from
Contact was the first casualty before Cecil the Lion.
That joke will never become dated at all.
Never.
Not
no
at
one
all.
Will remember it. Please
you
listen
want your,
to this.
You want your timely humor? Now. Come for Kevin Carr. Yeah. Like in 6 months, people will say, who, Cecil the Lion?
Is that a cartoon character?
Yeah, is that like an anime character?
Is that the character from Bugs Bunny? And go,
three
or four.
If you want to look back at the message board, and there's enough of it linked and still available on archive.org that you can check it out, it's pretty interesting because, one, this is way pre-social media, so you have a lot more conversation than goes on today.
Yeah.
Some of which is actually pretty interesting. One of my friends got on there and said he didn't think that Soldier, the Kurt Russell flop, should ever show because it's so soporific. And I said, man, no one ever uses the term soporific today. Wow. Jeez, that's pretty high class.
That's coming from somebody who thinks
I don't even use the word soporific.
Thinks that people just didn't get contact.
I haven't seen contact since the first day I saw it. I have no opinion on it. I don't think they should have pulled the movie just because a small group of people complained about it online.
That's a bad idea.
And I was one of those people, too. And I think...
Thanks, Joe.
Well, the big...
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because God knows my power was so Manson-esque and pervasive at that point. I think the problem you ran into was you had the Matrix, Contact, and Cube all together, plus potentially some premieres. And the Matrix was still very new in a lot of ways. It was kind of a commercial almost for the sequel, which was coming out the next year, I believe. 2003 was Matrix Reloaded. Yeah. And Cube was kind of an underseen film. And so Contact suffered a bit because it seemed like they were chucking up too many recent films at once. Plus, Contact, if you look at the original lineup, you've got Metropolis, which is 2 hours and 15 minutes. You've got The Matrix, which is over 2 hours. You've got Contact, which is over 2 hours. It's a lot of time being spent for, you know, big sci-fi films like that, where you could also have other stuff or rarer stuff or blah, blah, blah. Whatever.
Well, and I actually had said this to you before, but I'll say it, you know, just for the podcast, for the listeners. I think if you're going to I'm not against showing something that's recent, but I think to show something recent, it should basically fall in one of two categories. It should be something that's underseen. And I think you could make the argument that, like, in this list, Cube was underseen.
Definitely.
You know, that not everybody got a chance to see that. So I think that's a legitimate, and even though recent, that is just 5 years old. So I don't even know if that count that as very recent.
Mm-hmm.
It would either have to be, you know, like Your Next was a great example, which showed at the horror marathon that not everybody, very few people actually saw that. So it was underseen. And it should at least please the audience. I think that's, you know, to show something that's absolute shit that nobody cares about, that came out a year ago is folly. But it could also be something that maybe wasn't underseen, but is a good crowd pleasing film that you can play in the middle of the night. Matrix, doing the Matrix at 5:45 a.m.
Is
totally legitimate because it's a great movie to show. When they show Dread works.
Yeah. Well, I understand from the Drexel's perspective of
Contact fits into none of those.
Well, wanting to advertise the theater itself.
Yeah.
Show a recent film that takes advantage of what the theater can do at that point. If you show a bunch of old mono films, it kind of defeats some of the purpose for having it at the theater.
Yeah.
And I get that. If they wanted to show, say, The Matrix, and I remember watching it there, and I thought the sound was fantastic, and it looked really great, and that's cool. Or if they had only wanted to show Contact, let's say, because it's a big screen, and Contact, from what I remember, say what you will about it, there are parts of that film that definitely benefit from seeing it on a big screen, especially the climax to it, which is an extended tribute to 2001.
Essentially, I won't say that it's... There's a massive part of the movie that is pointless of whether you watch it on the big screen or the small screen. But yeah, the opening shot and the climax are very much big screen movies.
I think too, you know, I know Bruce enjoyed that film when he first saw it.
Bruce.
And I think part of what appealed to him, part of what appealed, I think, to me at that point too, and part of what I think kind of, I'm not going to speak for him, but if I had to, if he was dead or something right now, he's not dead, by the way. Just want to let you know.
You're
going to
feel like shit if you go home and find out that he got killed
tonight
at like a convenience store.
This is when we insert the notice afterwards. Bruce died 5 days later. Thank you for listening
to
the podcast.
7 days. We just gave him a awkward.
I think part of what appeals to people about Contact is it definitely fits into the aspirational science fiction genre.
Yeah.
And especially in the 90s, that was becoming a little more rare to have something that truly got into what a lot of people define sci-fi as being, which is a very aspirational, hopeful genre that looks ahead to what could possibly happen. I understand that. And again, I haven't seen Contact since it first came out, so I should probably go watch it at some point just to be able to pass some sort of judgment on it.
So bad.
Any case, Contact gets canceled, and the final lineup ends up having When Worlds Collide, Happy Accidents, the Columbus premiere of Happy Accidents.
Which was a neat little movie.
You have to understand, the reason this got booked is because earlier that year in 2002, it had its local premiere at the Boston Sci-Fi Marathon. I was in the crowd for that screening. Those of you who haven't seen it, by the way, it's a delightful little movie. Vincent D'Onofrio is a man who claims that he's traveled back from the future to save Marissa Tomei, who's this just normal woman living in New York. And it's kind of a
except she's Marissa fucking.
Well,
Tomei.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
She's just average.
Romantic comedy that happens to be about a guy who claims to be a time traveler. And when that played in Boston, not many people had seen it. Not many people knew what he was even about, aside from time travel. That had one of the best reactions to a marathon film I've ever seen in Boston. There is a very dramatic point at the climax of that film in which you could hear a pin drop in the theater. The ovation for the film at the end of that screening was tremendous. I mean, out of any of the films in that lineup, people ate that up. Wow. We came back, we reported on that, and that is a huge reason, because it went over so well up there, why it ended up playing in Columbus. And it had a good reaction in Columbus. Couple of people I know thought it was just a chick flick, as they called it. I won't name names. I might have already named those names in this podcast.
But once again, if you remove the science fiction element, you do not have a movie. But I can see where people...
a movie, but it's just...
You would not have a story.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't have a story at all, because then it would make no sense. It's sort of like... I would say Happy Accidents is very similar to... Safety Not Guaranteed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Same, in fact, in a lot of ways, same tone.
Yeah, that
same,
being
same
that
dynamic.
It was
yeah, yeah.
The
actually,
science
yeah.
fiction premise.
Come to think of it, you're
that
yeah,
really works. On,
yeah.
Oh, wait, was that a?
It's almost
I'm
like
what?
A, that's almost like a remake.
I'm right.
Sometimes, like a stop clock, man.
Blah,
like stop clock.
I have it on tape now.
So Happy Accidents. Then we went into Day the Earth Stood Still. Then we get into an interesting little movie. And I was joking with Kevin before we started this podcast that you could almost define the Arena Grand Marathons. Mm-hmm. You could define a sub-theme of them as being slightly contentious guests. And we get to the first pair here with the Midwest premiere of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, featuring the directors Doug Miles and Jackie Egan there. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in the long, long, illustrious line of films like Blobbermouth, Hideous Sun Demon, the special edition, films in which it's the original film, usually a B-movie/public domain B-movie. And what the creators of these films would do is they would take said B-movie and dub a new soundtrack over it. So, for instance, before we've talked about Night of the Living Dead, which was on a Nickelodeon program called Mad Movies back in the 80s, in which the comedy group, the LA Connection, dubbed new dialogue over Night of the Living Dead. And the news story was, the main girl, the Judith O'Day character, it's her birthday, and her friends are trying to throw her a surprise party, and the friends are the zombies. So every time the zombies try to break into the house, you see them saying, "Surprise!" And Judith O'Day's friends, fellow co-travelers keep saying, no, not yet, not yet, not yet. That was the basic gist of this little subgenre of movies. Don't Ask, Don't Tell was definitely in that subgenre. And it featured the classic B-movie howler, Killers from Space. But the dubbed-over dialogue had, and I'm going to mess this up a little bit, but as the tagline to the film says, they came from outer space to take over the world, and they're fabulous. And the underlying theme was that the aliens were all gay in a very, very campy manner. That was the film. And Doug Miles and Jackie Egan were in attendance that night, showed the film, did a Q&A for it. Audience seemed to generally like Don't Ask, Don't Tell. What was odd, maybe not so odd, but what was interesting, maybe I should say, is that in the aftermath of the marathon, and in years since then, I have run into some people, some of them my friends, some of them just people who I know through the marathon, acquaintances. And those friends/acquaintances were not big fans of Don't Ask, Don't Tell because they thought that it was slightly homophobic and that it dealt in too many gay stereotypes. Now, I'm not sure that Doug Miles and Jackie Egan were trying to offend anybody in that way. In fact, I think if I remember at the time when they were talking about the film, they talked about being big fans of Howard Stern and that type of comedy in which it's, you know, offend everybody, you know, equally. But it's interesting to note that because it's not even a marathon, it's not even a premiere that has become legendary. I mean, today, if you mentioned Don't Ask, Don't Tell, a lot of people probably wouldn't remember it. But it was interesting in that at the time, it seemed like they went over fairly well, but I had heard stories since then of people who did not like it and were kind of turned off by the tone of the film. And that was really, I think, that was kind of one of the big legit premieres in this marathon.
And then the next movie was...
was Gamera 3, Revenge of Iris, Iris, I forget.
Isis?
Prophetically enough, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to admit, from a personal standpoint, I've never been a huge fan of the modern Gamera and some of the modern Godzilla films, so I think
modern meaning like sort of post-turn of the century.
Yeah, so I might have ducked out during that. I definitely ducked out for a large portion of the next film, which those of you who know me well know has quite an odd little relationship with my sensibilities. The Midwest premiere of Larry Blamire's The Lost Skeleton of Kadabra.
You didn't like it because it was a spoof?
My thoughts on Larry Blamire are the following, and it hurts me to say this because I've read the man's articles he's written for magazines like Video Watchdog. He seems like a really nice guy. He obviously loves the genre. I just hate his films. I think that they are... I like spoofs. Top of the Food Chain that showed at Sci-Fi in 2000. I think that was a really good spoof of 50s atomic era sci-fi films. Blamire's films, to me, they just seem like dumb, self-conscious riffs on spoofs. So it's more in lines with saying like, haha, I am a man with a square jaw, and now I will talk like a man with a square jaw, wink, wink. And I just don't find that stuff funny. Like, why?
They're a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, I had to sit through Trail of the Screaming Forehead at one of the Boston marathons, and it was just painful. It was like, heavy-handed is probably the best way to put it. I know there are some people who love Larry Blamire's films, more power to him, that's cool, but I personally don't.
I liked it, and it was funny. This was the last one we saw, because then we ducked out. Because I recall not liking Life Force when I first saw it years ago at one of the marathons. Mm-hmm. And I think all the people I was with was ready to go. And, of course, we were running behind. So it was probably closer to 4 a.m. than 3 a.m. So I think everybody was ready to go. Yeah. And obviously, we'd all seen The Matrix. We'd seen Cube. I wasn't a wild fan of THX 1138. So we went in and ducked out after that. But I remember really liking Lost Skeleton.
Oh, a lot of people did.
I've never watched the sequel.
A lot of people like that, too. I am readily willing to admit this is all me. I'm the one with these snotty tastes or snooty tastes.
Well, I knew that.
Snotty, snooty. Hello.
Hmm.
Life Force, boy. That holds a special place in my heart.
We all love Matilda May.
Yeah, yeah. I think Life Force, especially in the director's cut form, is just a gloriously unhinged movie, and it doesn't quite all fit together. Say what you will. There is more to the film than that, although that is a nice...
It's a selling point.
Feature.
It certainly is a selling point.
It is
point.
Her calling card.
Space vampires and boobs, spelled B-E-W-B.
Yeah, and the way that it ends, it just kind of ends. It's like a whole bunch of apocalyptic shit is happening.
Where little Timmy teaches the space vampires the true meaning of Christmas.
There's that, yeah. Yeah. I would love to bring Life Force back at some point for one of the marathons, just because I think it would be... interesting all these years later to see a younger audience that has not seen it.
I do not recall whether or not I've seen the director's cut versus the original cut. I've seen it a couple times over the years. Mm-hmm. Are they very different?
I believe there's like a 15-minute difference between the two.
Well, I mean, that's time. I mean,
yeah.
Does it marginally change?
That's the weird
story?
Thing. I don't know if I've seen the original cut. I have the special edition that has the director and the theatrical. It has slightly different music in parts.
Okay.
I forget the rest of that. So, okay, two Bruce related stories from this marathon. One,
because we do have to move on to the next.
Yeah, one. Yeah. About a week before the marathon, I get a call from Bruce, and he tells me he has broken his foot.
Whoops.
Which I believe is the one time in marathon history that something apocalyptic like this happened to him.
Strange things were afoot.
Yes. Thus, he is. He is, it's way too
caught
late.
You off guard on that.
Yes, he is way too, he is confined to crutches.
Confined
to the entire marathon.
Confined to crutches makes it sound like he can't go, he was in this corner of the marathon.
It got difficult for him to move around or sit or walk around or
stand.
This is kind
of the way he is now.
Right? Yeah, well, these things happen. So Bruce spent the entire marathon on crutches, which is a great way to engender sympathy from the audience.
Yes.
I'll say that. THX 1138, a film that I really like. First time it ever played the marathon.
Is this the original? This isn't
the original, not the director's cut that Lucas made a couple years later.
With Jar Jar Binks in it.
Yeah. I had always wanted to see this in a marathon. Like the film. When they first booked it, Bruce said, oh, It'll be great because the final shot of the film, spoiler for those of you who haven't seen it, is Robert Duvall's character coming up out from the underground lair and he sees the sun, coming up, I believe it is. Yeah, the sun's coming up. Yeah. And it's like, it's a perfect ending because it's just like the marathon crowd when they exit the theater and the sun is out now. And even at that point, I said, Bruce, you're nuts. This is not a good film to show last. It's really slow. It's a great film, but don't show it last.
It's a 5 o'clock in the afternoon
film.
He
clung steadfastly to showing it last. Wow. And I struggled mightily, I'm sure, with some other people to stay awake. And I razz him to this day. I will unashamedly razz him to this day that is a film that should not play last.
I'll be honest. I could have like a full 8 hours of sleep all week each night, and I'd probably still have trouble.
It's a hard
struggling
thing
to stay awake.
I think we should bring it back and show it first at some point.
It could work as a first film.
Yeah.
But once you get past 6 o'clock, you're running a gamble.
It's very rough. So the first year at the Arena Grand actually was a success in a lot of ways. I don't have access to the attendance, but I know there was a bump from the previous couple years.
If I recall, it was pretty full.
Yeah. And people seemed to really have a good time. You know, any kind of criticism I have being on the outside and being the guy who was programming the horror marathon at the time, no matter any criticism I might have had about the programming direction, the event was a success, and it seemed to bode well for the future. So building on the back of that success, they went to the next year, and the next year had what was on paper going to be one of the big guests in the history of the marathon. That was Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy, the famous star of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think. Let me check the flyer here. I could be completely off my rocker here. In fact, I am completely off my rocker here. It was not the 50th anniversary of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. But the idea was to bring Kevin McCarthy in, show Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original, and then the Twilight Zone, the movie, which he features in, famously in Joe Dante's episode, It's a Good Life, which...
Yeah.
Scared the living shit out of me when I was a kid due to the sister with no mouth and the demon rabbit that comes out of the hat.
The giant,
oh my god,
the giant dinosaur-ish dragon that eats.
Oh, thank
Bart
you, thank
Simpson.
You, thank you, thank you. That freaked me out too.
That I was about to say that doesn't scare you.
To this day, I am mortally petrified of being eaten by a giant creature, and that little bit.
Yeah.
Especially afterwards. I'm thinking about it right now. I'm getting freaked out. When the dragon kind of licks its lips. Oh, my.
That's awful. No, he doesn't say that. No, he's... I forget. What does he say?
He says something... Well, the kid. Bill, not the Billy Mummy. The new
yeah,
Billy,
the
he,
new
Oliver world. Barrett. He's the one who says, that's all, that's all folks.
I think... I don't even know if it's intelligible what
I don't know
the
if he,
creature says.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He eats Bart Simpson.
Fucked me up when I was a kid. God.
Yeah, the
good for
was,
Joe Dante though.
Good. That's one of the scariest PG movie. That's one of the scariest PG things you're going to ever see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and add that on top of the George Miller's Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, and the creature, the reboot of that. That's pretty strong stuff there. And John Lithgow freaking out.
Yeah.
In that final episode, that it's some intense stuff that goes on in that movie.
Didn't at some point there was an episode where there was some episode of TV where John Lithgow and I might be getting this wrong, but I thought that John Lithgow and William Shatner were featured somewhere and they saw each other like at an airport or something like that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Maybe that was like Third Rock from the Sun.
I can't remember what it was, but I think I don't even remember. I've heard of it, but yeah, I think that was something.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That would be awesome because they both seem like very game to do something.
Oh yeah.
Like that.
Oh yeah. So the 2003 marathon, Kevin McCarthy was scheduled to come out.
Yeah.
And we made it to the marathon. And I remember walking in, seeing Jeff Frank, and saying how excited I was about the guest. And Jeff says, well, he's not here.
Oh.
Because Kevin McCarthy, little did I know at the time, Kevin McCarthy was almost 90.
Yeah.
He was really old. I mean,
yeah,
he
lasted
held up very
like
well.
7 more years
I know,
or something.
I know. Oh. He apparently the week before had been sick and developed an inner ear infection. And his doctor told him, you cannot fly.
Oh, okay.
So he didn't show up, but there to save the day was our old pal Mark Hoik, recently of Beat the Geeks fame, the Comedy Central trivia game show. Mark, who was living in Los Angeles, arranged to meet with Kevin McCarthy, I think maybe at McCarthy's house or at a mutual apartment, and he did a nice long interview with McCarthy.
Yeah.
And McCarthy, McCarthy sends it off to the marathon crowd and says hi to them. And it was fairly nice. I mean, it was kind of disappointing because Kevin McCarthy, in a lot of ways, is a bit of a legend in his own you know, in terms of the genre in his own small way.
Yeah.
But in terms of iconic poses, iconic scenes, you know, him in Body Snatchers, You're Next, all of that was pretty big. Good lesson to learn. We've tried to replicate. Try not to bring out guests who are in their 80s or
well,
beyond. Well, yeah, we'll get to that. Well, that I know you'll have a lot to say about that.
That always blew up in everyone's face at one point.
Try is the key word there.
What am I here for?
I know. But so Kevin McCarthy was supposed to be there. However, even though he wasn't there, that's not to take away from the quality of the lineup.
You know, it's funny. I actually met Kevin McCarthy 15 years before that. He came out to my high school and he played Give 'Em Hell Harry.
Oh wow,
the Harry Truman one man
show.
Yeah,
yeah.
And since it was put on by the drama, it was sponsored by my. I don't know why the hell he was out there, but it was sponsored by my drama department. Yeah, and I got to meet him. He was a real nice guy. Cool. Yeah, he was old then. I mean,
he always seemed to be a really nice guy.
Yeah.
It's too bad he couldn't come out. Yeah. The lineup for this year at this marathon, you've got another Gamera film. I know.
It's crammed
another
here.
Gamera
well,
film.
if you look at Dave Zucchini's list, it looks very crammed, but that's because it has all these. You broke up the Twilight Zone movie, and you broke up this Captain America sequel.
Yes, yeah, and that I think was the interesting part of it is that originally there were plans to show Twilight Zone the movie altogether, but then Bruce got the idea, which was pretty interesting, to show the Twilight Zone episodes separated,
which I think is a great idea.
Yeah, and the plan was to show It's a Good Life, the McCarthy episode of the Twilight Zone, the movie, followed by Invasion of the Body Snatchers, followed by McCarthy in person.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, obviously. And I think in the end, only two of the Twilight Zone episodes might have shown.
Because the other two knocked off.
There we go. Yeah, you're looking at Dave's list. I'm looking at the
the analog program.
Memories from this marathon, Gamera Part 2, Midwest premiere, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Robot Monster. I had never seen Robot Monster until
this so
summer.
Dumb.
It is that I think. Now Kevin and I were razzing each other before the podcast,
Monster.
And he claimed I don't like really bad movies. I love Robot Monster too. That is a legitimately shitty movie.
You know, Robot Monster for the geeks out there that are into Doctor Who, Robot Monster has a bizarrely associated plot line to the Centauran experiment, I think is what it was. It's one of the Fourth Doctor's episode, and it's a two-part episode with the Centauran, when they first introduced the Centaurans. And it reminds, those in my mind are inexplicably linked. Because they're very similar, where this is an alien that's coming down to try and determine whether or not it's worth, taking over Earth.
It is the famous gorilla suit with the space helmet on.
So amazing.
Film, which, in years later, one of the longtime Marathoids bought or resurrected an ape costume, dressed up as Roman several times, dressed up as the ape from 2001 once, dressed up, won several costume contests, and we began to refer to him as Roman.
See, for me, I would actually dress up in a space suit and a gorilla head, and then I would be the anti-Roman. But it would be
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil it. No. That next marathon.
It would go over as well as my Teen Witch dance.
Oh, that was a classic moment.
There's one woman in the front row who got it.
She was completely rocking out the house.
She loved it.
Yeah. Funny part about this marathon and Robot Monster, there was a guy seated about four or five rows behind me. I was on the ground floor, and there was someone sitting up on the risers on the ground floor of the Arena Grand, in front of the projection booth. Yeah. And he had a deep stentorian voice like this, and Roman in Robot Monster refers to himself in the third person. It says, Roman is here to do blah, blah, blah. So the guy for the rest of the marathon, you would hear him doing callbacks, and he'd do them as Roman. And he'd say, Roman does not like that, or please do not make Roman angry, or blah, blah, blah. And sometimes they were pretty funny.
Yeah.
And he managed to pick his spots well enough that it didn't get tiresome. And he just peppered them throughout the event. And I remember when we were getting up to leave, at the end of the marathon, the place is like four-fifths cleared out.
And he actually talks like that.
I'll see you later, Bruce Martu.
He said, my friends and I are like, there's four of us on the ground floor.
Yeah.
And there's maybe six or seven other people in the whole theater at that point. And I just hear out of nowhere, I hear this guy and he says, Roman is tired. And that was it. And I never met this guy. And all I know is the Roman guy. And it was like a perfect... I cracked up right there because it was the perfect cap or two.
What do you know... here's an interesting trivia about... Did you know that Robot Monster was originally in 3D?
Yeah.
There is not a damn thing in that movie that works for at all.
I know.
I mean, it's not even like... Like, if you go back to original three, like, Buona Devil, have you seen Buona Devil?
I haven't seen Buona Devil, no.
Buona Devil was one of the first, I think, what is it, the first major studio release that was 3D?
That sounds about right.
I think that's
right.
What it was. And they, but there are these gimmicky shots. I've seen Roman, I've never actually watched it in 3D because it's always that anaglyph crap, but I've watched the movie and I'm like, I don't know what they could have done with this to make it look
cool
in 3D.
Yeah.
It's not a 3D. I mean, like, even like the Creature from the Black Lagoon, you have it swimming and all that, and you have in like the in It Came from Outer Space, the things coming at you.
Oh yeah,
screen.
Yeah.
None of that at all in Roman.
Are you saying that someone would try to exploit 3D for a film that doesn't really feature it, all in the name of making more money?
But
no one would ever do that.
But exploiting, I mean, it was like really early in the 3D craze. It's like, I mean, I understand if it was like in the late 50s, but Jesus.
Nah, no one ever does that today, do they?
Yeah, no.
Nah.
It was kind of like, what was it, the Wes Craven movie? Don't Go to Sleep, or no.
Don't Go to Sleep?
Nah, what was the one with the one that came out in about 2010?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It had a title like some kind of...
And Now I Go to Sleep or
something
like that.
Some kind of catchphrase that you hear, a cliched catchphrase.
Yeah, that seemed completely more like something else that he would have
Sleep, perchance, to dream, was it?
Yeah, no, that's way too esoteric. Pretentious bastard. You know what's funny? What's hilarious about this marathon is, honestly, I think the only thing I remember about this marathon is watching Kevin McCarthy's bit.
Wow. That's interesting.
So obviously I was there because I remember seeing it. But I don't remember any... I don't remember the Captain Marvel sequel serial. I don't remember Robot Monster.
A little too much glug, 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 glug.
Yeah, I don't remember the Twilight Zone
episodes.
A little
too much imbibing at the Arena Grands, decadent desserts. And,
I don't even think that.
Bounteous supply of alcohol.
I wasn't much of a drinker back then.
Well, I must
Not
say, by
now.
The way, the Arena Grand... the Arena Grand... did have a pretty nice concession stand.
Yeah.
I will always give them credit for that.
But God, I don't remember Beyond Reanimator.
Beyond Reanimator.
I remember not watching Cowboy Bebop. I think I vaguely remember Cowboy Bebop.
I think Cowboy Bebop and Beyond Reanimator, that was one of the better 1-2 premiere punches of the post-Drexel North years. I mean, if you don't like anime, you're not going to like Cowboy Bebop. Huge anime film.
It's very anime overdone.
Yeah. I'm not a huge anime film fan.
Is it anime?
Anime.
I thought it was anime.
Anime. I don't know.
Tomato.
Welcome to Xenophobia.
Why is it suddenly Xenophobia? Jesus. Like playing the race card at every corner, man. All right, Al Sharpton.
That's me. I'm the Al Sharpton of the marathon.
You are.
I love it.
Your hair.
God. Why do you do these things to me?
I don't know.
You know I'm such a simpleton. Yeah. Cowboy Bebop I thought was pretty enjoyable. I loved Beyond Reanimator, and the reason I loved
it... remember it. It's amazing.
Well, if you don't remember it, Beyond Reanimator is Herbert West in prison, and he befriends a new Dan Cain-esque figure to help him with his experiments. It's shot entirely in Spain because Brian Usna's company, FilmFax or FilmAx, was in Spain at that point. And so it's great, although it's not set in Spain. And at a certain point, you realize almost all the people in the prison are Spanish.
This isn't Rhode Island.
Yeah, yeah. But I tell you what, that to me is a film that proves that if there's nothing else you like about the Reanimator films, Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West makes the whole show. I mean,
I met him once. He's a weird dude.
He seems like he's...
He's a little odd.
He's very odd, but he's very game for the fan.
Oh, he's
culture.
A sweetheart. Yeah. He's a real nice guy, but he's weird.
Yeah.
Which is funny because apparently he didn't like horror movies.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think Beyond Reanimator is a great example of a premiere, of like a classic horror marathon premiere.
Yeah.
And it's something that did not really have a theatrical release. But
well, I remember it was like Bride of the Reanimator. That was the same deal.
You got to see it first. in the region there, and it played pretty well with the crowd.
Yeah,
I think it's still a pretty fun movie too. Superman: The Director's Cut. First time it ever showed at a marathon.
I don't remember.
I don't know what to tell you.
I don't. You know, maybe we left during Cowboy Bebop because I don't remember Beyond Reanimator at all. I guess Invasion. I've seen Invasion of the Body Snatcher so many times, and the Twilight Zone movies that maybe I just don't remember. Yeah. Let me ask you this: there was the scene at the very end, which doesn't make any goddamn sense because it violates its own rules within the movie, where Becky isn't it Becky? Isn't that Becky from Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Yeah.
And was it Becky?
I forget.
Or was it Betsy?
I forget.
Or Betty. Whatever her name was. Yeah. So, and she's falling asleep, and then he picks her up and he kisses her, and she turns into a pod person, but it's like the pod, but where'd she come from? That's my question.
I haven't seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original version, in a long time. Isn't it? They're both trying to escape.
They're in a cave.
They go to the cave, and he
leaves her.
Yeah, and then he comes back long enough that she would have fallen asleep, and then.
But he goes to her, who has fallen asleep, and then she is the pod person.
Yeah.
Unlike Brooke Adams in the remake, where he's holding her and she disintegrates, and then Brooke Adams shows up.
Oh, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. Well, wait, in the original, I forget, do they? Yeah, they
establish. Because he's kissing her and she changes while he's kissing her.
That is true. And they do establish in the original that you collapse when the pod person takes over for you. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. I never got that. But at that point, there's a line where he says, nothing. I don't remember the exact line, but he says, it's not, I didn't feel fear or horror as much as when I kissed Becky or Betsy Driscoll. Driscoll was her last name.
Okay.
You're the one hiccuping now. Because I haven't felt horror until I kissed Becky. And then everyone roared at that line because it's a very awkwardly, it's a 50s line that plays very funny now.
Yeah.
Did they roar at this one, or was I maybe thinking, because they've shown Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah. My first marathon, they showed both versions.
And I think it might have been at the old Drexel North that I saw. I don't remember this.
Thing I remember about this is Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a good film.
Yeah.
You know, despite whatever somewhat dated dialogue might be in it. And there was
still a fantastic movie.
There was a lot more talking during this film than there had been the first time around. And I had several friends who got really pissed off because people were trying to do callbacks to this. And it was very obvious after a while that no one was really interested in their callbacks, but they kind of just kept going.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, it's old. Great. And there's, I don't know, there is that subsection of the crowd. It's kind of mellowed out, but for a few years in the mid-2000s, there was a subsection where people would come and you could tell right away they thought, I'm really funny and I'm going to crack the crowd up. And it didn't go over well.
Yeah.
But they just kind of kept going. There was one person who I think I knew at one of the Gateway Marathons who, during King Kong, during the first movie, sat in the front and then would start doing callbacks and would like look straight up.
So his voice would carry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And finally he had to have two of my friends in front of him turn around and say, please, shut up. You know, because no one was laughing at his callbacks.
Well, you know what's funny? I remember this was a marathon I went to with Joe Caroni.
God rest his soul.
He's not dead. It's going to happen. There's going to be this bizarre incident where both Joe Caroni and Bruce Bartu are killed in separate, like robbery's gone wrong.
Joe Caroni.
And we're going to feel terrible.
Joe Caroni, never forget.
So Joe Caroni and I were there at the marathon and we were goofing off and giggling and making comments at something. I think it was the bird with the crystal plumage. And some
by
people
goofing
were
goofing off, you mean making out in the back, right?
Yeah. Okay. No, we're in the front. but we're making fun of it. I think some people were getting annoyed, but, Scott Cozzolino, did I say his last name?
Yeah.
Right? And who did he always come with back in the, like, around this time, the 90s?
Probably John Braden, another one of my friends.
The two of them
named.
Were, like, right in front of us, and they were laughing at our line, so we thought we were okay.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah, they're not the best. Trust me, they are not the best judge of appropriateness. We went to the Cleveland Sci-Fi Marathon. Oh, no, we went to the Boston Sci-Fi Marathon this year. This is where it happened. And Scott and John were together sitting right by me. I went upstairs because they have a balcony in the Somerville Theater in Boston. I went upstairs for a few movies before the final film.
Yeah.
And when I came down for the final film, Scott tells me, he says, oh, Joe, you missed it. The two people who were sitting in front of us for the entire marathon, near the end of that last film, they got up and very publicly turned around and berated us and said, you ruined the marathon for us. I said, wow, you jackasses. Nice job.
Scott and... That's
well,
great.
Well, John's a guy. He's going to hate me for this. Well, he hates everybody anyway. John, we used to joke around about him that if we'd say, oh, come on, John, this is good, he'd say, oh, come on, you can't be serious. Like, for him, he hated all films.
Yes.
Except for anime and some other small things.
Or anime.
So John would, like, joke a lot. I love John. He's one of my good friends. But I always have to have someone sit in between me and John at a marathon because I fear that he's going to drive me over the edge. Scott is just enough of a quality human being and a general joker that he'll play into what John does. So, if you see a bald guy and a guy with really long hair sitting next to each other at the next marathon.
Well, he wasn't bald back then.
Bald or balding now.
Well, he had the dark hair.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you see them and they're laughing and you think, oh, well, they're laughing, don't always take
that. Well,
as
no,
the
reason
judge.
Is because I figured we were safe because then at the end of the marathon, you came down and you were chatting with them, and I'm like, oh, they're friends.
We're
good, Joe.
Yeah.
We can make fun of the Dario Argento movies all we want.
I was in the back saying, why are you not absorbing the greatness of this film? I was probably asleep, actually.
This was not the Arena Grand.
No.
Is that all we got to say about this?
Well, let's...
I don't remember shit.
Okay.
Nothing.
Here are some little tips from this marathon.
You could tell me you showed the unedited Zapruder film that shows...
We did.
Aliens killing JFK.
We did, in fact.
And I don't remember that.
Some of you out there might have hazy or gauzy, pleasant memories of Killer Clowns from Outer Space, thinking it is unabashed craziness. That is not a good film to show in the middle of the night. It is pretty damn slow by today's standards.
It's a bit of a
2002 standards.
I mean, when they showed it originally, when it was kind of, well, it wasn't a premiere, but it was contemporary.
Yeah.
It went over great, but yeah, it's a little bit slower now because it's, and back then it was what, 2003,
I take that back.
15 years old.
Yeah. Equilibrium, the film that closed the marathon. Another Boston success story.
Is that the one with...
Taye Diggs and Christian Bale.
Taye Diggs.
Who follows Kevin on Twitter.
Taye Diggs does follow me on Twitter.
He does.
You know, I've gone and I've said I have a gay friend. And because I once told him, I said, if there was anyone I would go gay for, it'd be Taye Diggs.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's a good-looking dude.
He's Hedwig in the Angry Inch.
Is he?
Broadway production, yeah. No kidding.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so Equilibrium. Completely falls under the radar when it gets a brief theatrical run back in 2002-2003.
Yeah.
Shows at the Boston Sci-Fi Marathon as the final film in 2002, I believe it was. Yeah, 2002. None of us know much about it, and we're like, I don't know, maybe we'll skip out on that. Well, let me tell you something, Jack. Equilibrium went over like gangbusters.
Did it?
As the final film at the Boston Sci-Fi. Yeah, it was, I mean, people were legitimately pumped up. John Braden, who hates films.
I don't like this.
Really
movie.
Liked Equilibrium. Well, this is... Well, you're the one who's key. Now,
well,
now,
but it's also 2003.
You keep saying, I don't remember anything about this. I'm trying to tell you what happened.
I saw it.
Yeah.
But it's also 2003. You watch it now, it doesn't hold up special effects-wise.
No, that's fine. But in 2003, when they showed in Columbus last, it went over fairly well because it's a very simple kind of dumb concept.
Yeah.
But it's got enough action in it. It's Christian Bale pre-Batman, so he's still kind of a mid-range actor. And
it's trying to be the Matrix in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Oh, it's very much kind of like a Matrix ripoff.
Yeah.
But it was very, very endearing to the Boston crowd. And it was pretty endearing to the Columbus crowd, too. I think that's a great example of what you talked about, a film that is underseen. Mm. And it might not be a great film in this case, but it played really well with the crowd.
Well, yeah, it didn't get much of a theatrical release.
No, that's a film that you discover again with a crowd like that.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, you talked about...
You know, I'll bet you it would be much better to see in a big crowd.
Probably.
I don't know.
I think
10 in the morning might be rough. But
going back to what you said about showing recent films,
yeah.
The gold standard for me in terms of films that show at a certain time, I've mentioned this before, RoboCop 2, not a great film, showed third from last at my first ever sci-fi marathon. Fantastic film to show at that time of the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of senseless violence, enough gritty stuff that it kind of keeps you going along
in
and
a
wakes
weird
you back
way,
up with a crowd.
In a weird way, the dumbest, most basal films work best in the middle of the night.
Absolutely.
They do.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was year two
with
the Arena Grand.
Eight-Legged Freaks probably went over well.
Probably. I don't remember much about that. I fell asleep during Eight-Legged Freaks and X-Men, so I can't remember much about that. But anyway, the Arena Grand's rolling on, and then we get to 2004. 2004 is interesting because the main guest for that marathon, in his own way, is a very huge figure in the special effects industry, and that's Phil Tippett.
Mm, yeah.
And it's kind of...
Worked on Star Wars.
Yeah. Kind of sad that he was booked after the main publicity for the marathon went out.
Okay.
So as opposed to a lot of the guests that have come through the marathon, you see Phil Tippett, and in the program it looks really cool, but it wasn't like a huge, huge, widely known fact he was going to be there until, I think, a week or two before.
Okay.
Which... is kind of mind-blowing in some ways. I mean, Phil Tippett's not a household name, but when you start talking about what he's done...
Well, to geeks he is.
Yeah, but, when you start talking about what he's done,
anybody
would say, oh, that guy.
But you brought him in for Starship Troopers 2.
Starship Troopers 2, which he directed.
Generally, let me just kind of give you a little bit of advice.
And I think part of that, too, I think there was definitely a connection between those two happening at the same event. I don't think that was pure coincidence.
This may be the wine dog. But let me just give you a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of unsolicited advice about famous people within an industry. If they're like great special effects people, bringing them in as a special guest for their first movie they've directed might not be the best choice.
Were you at that marathon?
Yeah, I was.
Okay, yeah. I think he was a really good guest.
I was there alone, though. I didn't. By this point, I had lost all of my friends.
Shock. Shock.
I'd kind of dropped
out. Shock at this point. Wow.
I dropped out of the filmmaking community. I had started, by this point, I was doing movie reviews, actually. This was in my infancy of the movie reviews.
Yeah.
And I'd actually had seen, because you had Sandy Cholera there too, who I had seen that year or maybe following at Comic-Con, because he was using Batman Dead End.
Batman Dead End, for those of you who've never seen it, was Sandy Cholera's calling card. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was considered to be an example amongst fandom of what Batman, the film series, should get back to being. It was Batman, the Joker, who was played by Walter Koenig's son, who played Boner on Growing Pains.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Didn't look like him at all.
No. And included Alien, like the Alien from...
Yeah. That was a little stinger.
Yeah, yeah, but this was like what, 4 or 5 years after Batman and Robin, and when people saw this online, they thought, "Oh my god,
no, this is like seven,
because Batman and Robin was 1997,
'98, yeah, this was 2004.
Okay, so it was
like right before, like they were doing the new Batman Begins.
They were doing the new Batman rebooting. Begins. I believe they started making it, or the design for it was, or after Batman Dead End was in circulation, because Sandy Cholera talked about seeing the new design for the suit at this marathon.
He was not a fan.
No, as he said, I didn't like it. Sandy Cholera is another one of those weird, slightly divisive guests where I didn't mind him. I thought he was kind of interesting for a guy showing up with a short film.
Yeah.
But again, afterwards I had friends and some other acquaintances who really didn't like him. They thought he was really arrogant and stuck up. I guess it depends on what you're looking for in a guest. If you're looking for someone who's just very humble and appreciative,
if you want somebody who's endearing,
he's not
going
to be that guy. I thought he was fairly interesting, though.
Well, because Cholera had such a he had a history of working on a lot of big movies.
Yeah,
as a special effects guy, and he ended up not going anywhere. And honestly, the way the industry works, it was probably because he just didn't get along with very many people.
Yeah, I could see that.
You have to be able to schmooze a bit.
Yeah.
And he's not a schmoozer.
Yeah. Phil Tippett, on the other hand. The movie itself, I complained about Starship Troopers 2 vociferously online.
Mm-hmm.
As a film itself, I saw it again about a year later. It's okay. For a direct-to-video film, it's mildly entertaining. Yeah. I think Phil Tippett was a great guest. I think the content he brought to the Q&A,
he was,
fantastic. It's kind of...
Just the reason to get him out there was
and it's kind of... You would think if you're going to bring Phil Tippett out, you should show a couple of his major films.
Yeah,
but
expect Return of the Jedi to show.
Yeah, but the coordination of him coming, I think, was late enough in the game that wasn't an option.
Yeah.
What did show, aside from Starship Troopers 2, I think this is a pretty solid lineup. Leading off things is Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack, which I think is one of the better modern Godzilla films.
That's not the one directed by Takashi Miishi.
No, it was Kitamura. Who directed Versus? Directed Final Godzilla Final Wars.
Oh, who directed? What did Miyake direct?
Miyake hasn't directed a Godzilla film.
I thought he did. I thought they did something maybe it was at the Gateway. He directed.
Miyake directed the Great Yokai War.
That's
not
a
Godzilla film.
Yeah, but it's a
giant
kaiju
monster.
It's a kaiju movie. right?
There is a difference. Just say it.
Come between on. What?
Just say I'm wrong. The words are...
No, what are you postulating?
Are, I'm wrong.
No, what?
Takashi Miike did not direct. Why am I talking
about
no,
high-pitched
voice?
I don't know where this goes. Suddenly I'm a little pixie. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Joe.
Joe, I was wrong about Takashi Miike directing a Godzilla movie.
Thank you. That's all I really wanted.
I want to be a Starship captain just
was,
like you.
Someday, kid. Someday. Hang around me enough. No, Miike directs The Great Yokai War, which shows it Gateway years later.
Well, that's for another...
That's another
podcast. Another story.
But Giant Monsters All Out Attack, it's what the title says if you haven't seen it.
There's a lot of monsters in this
There
movie.
Are, and it's a lot of fun. It's the big complaint I had with a lot of the modern Godzilla films, even though some of the old ones have this problem too, is they would spend way too much time apart from the monsters. Lots of times with the humans, and really in these labyrinthine plots that are not that interesting, and you're just saying, get to the monster. Now, I understand.
Well, sometimes Gareth, this one's from the 70s is like just like 80 minutes
of monsters
No.
Duking
it out.
Like I said, that is the case for some of the originals too. I say that as a fan of the Gareth Edwards Godzilla, where I like that approach, but but that's another podcast. We're running out of time. I'm not going to let you have that. The Amazing Transparent Man.
I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of kaiju movies.
I like classic kaiju movies more than some of the 20th
century reboots.
They're
fun for the cheese
reboot.
Factor.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing Transparent Man is what it says it's about. That was a public domain title that Bruce acquired a print of, along with Mutiny in Outer Space, which is steel wool attacking a spaceship in outer space.
Wait, is that Red Luck coming back?
No, that was tinfoil, not steel wool.
Oh, is there a difference?
Yes.
again, playing the race card.
Wow, I don't know what to say about that. Glug, 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 glug.
Was Creature from the Black
Lagoon? I think I should be drinking more at this point.
I probably shouldn't.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Was that in 3D?
Yeah, that was in 3D.
But Anaglyph 3D.
Anaglyph 3D, yeah. But still fairly nice. Okay, at 9:10 was one of the all-time great stinkers of a movie. Again, here's another example. Terrible B movie that I love, The Giant Claw, which had not shown somehow since SF2 back in 1988, the giant turkey bird monster. It is such an awful, rotten, terrible film, and it's so much fun with the crowd.
Oh yeah,
unbelievably fun with the
crowd. Oh, it's amazing. It's you know, I don't recall seeing The Giant Claw. I must have watched it.
And this was a brand new print.
But
you know
what?
So that means they went and made a new print of The Giant Claw.
But what's funny about this, because this is one I was all by myself, and I remember just sitting in the
corner.
No. I was in the middle, but I was in like that center section. Yeah, with the truck stop hooker. I was in that center section. And I must have just, because The Giant Claw is more fun to watch with friends.
Very much so. Yeah.
And a couple months ago, several months ago, actually, my boys and I had gone over to Tim Martin's, who we've mentioned before, who doesn't think Contact is a science fiction.
And by his boys, he means his posse.
Yes, my posse.
My boys gangsters. My boys and I went over to Tim Martin's house.
My boys. So,
we raised
and he showed a bunch of these, cheesy movies from the 70s and 80s and he threw in the Giant Claw. And I don't recall ever seeing it, but it's a hoot to watch with people that you like. And I think that's probably why it was a little lost on me at this marathon.
Yeah.
Because when you're alone, it's weird. I have no problem going to movies alone. I don't like going to a marathon alone because you got to have somebody to share the experience with.
When you're alone and watching movies, you don't want to be at
a
marathon.
It is downtown.
Yeah. We'll work on that.
But I do remember, Starship Troopers too, and I remember Batman Dead End.
Here's another, I keep telling this.
Robot Stories is really
It is true. Yeah, Robot Stories. I skipped out and ate dinner during that because I had seen it in Boston earlier in the year. That is a cool case where I think the guest can truly make film. I think Robot Stories is good nonetheless.
Mm.
But they showed it as a local premiere in Boston earlier that year, and the director, Greg Pak, came out. And Greg Pak gave, I might be forgetting something, but he gave one of my favorite Q&As I think I've ever seen of a marathon guest.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of big people, but Greg Pak was so down to earth and such a unabashed fan of the genre and talked about it so intelligently. And really, I mean, the film itself is good, but he really sold the motivations for it, and he really did a nice back and forth with the audience. Greg Pak, you might know because he went on to be somewhat of a big deal in the comic book industry when he started writing The Incredible Hulk. He did the Planet Hulk storyline. He's done stuff for DC Comics.
Never heard of that company.
Good for you. You're just going to be obtuse now.
I'm just
welcome to Kevin is a dick.
Oh, KevinIsADick.com.
KevinIsADick.com.
That's already reserved for a totally different website, sure let me is. Tell you.
Greg Pak, not at the Columbus Marathon. I pushed for that. And
yeah, I was about to say, I don't recall anybody being out there.
I think the audience would have really dug
it. You should have gotten a robot.
They probably, yeah.
It was probably hitchhiking.
I probably
could have
imitated Greg Pak. Yeah.
In Philadelphia.
Well, and by the time Phil Tippett got there, too, I can see why they wouldn't want to have a third guest at that point.
Sandy Collar probably shivved him in the kidneys. Fucking Sandy Collar.
Where are you today, Sandy? Huh? Where are you today?
We're going to get hate mail from him.
Sandy's
and Werner Herzog and Jimmy Stewart, King. Who's dead, and Stephen
and
King.
And Prince.
Oh, that's right.
When marathons cry.
Somebody's going to do that as a ringtone. I haven't gotten
that
email
to me. I was by myself at the marathon, watching the movies by myself. This is the sound when Kevin cries. I can't watch Giant Claw by myself. Okay, yeah, I've been reading too much about that. You know what? The final four films in this lineup, I regrettably was completely bushed by this point. So I kind of dozed through some of this. I had started teaching.
I had left
was the beginning
by this
of
point.
My nascent career. This is a high quality final four films. The Omega Man, 28 Days Later, Total Recall, and The Road Warrior.
That's a great line. That is a great run of films, but like at the time I was so tired and I was alone and it wasn't fun to watch those, you know,
poor
by
man.
Myself.
You needed someone to cuddle you. You know, if you had known me better, I would have cuddled.
Well, 6 years later, my son was going, 6 or 7 years later,
now
my
you
son
can
was
cuddle
going,
with him. I see.
Well, and he wouldn't let me leave.
Yeah. Thank you, Liam. Thank you. And Ben. That was a pretty great ending to the marathon. Road Warrior, you can never go wrong with that. I mean,
that's ended. That's finalized marathons before that. Wasn't that the
yeah,
final?
That was, I believe that was the
90.
Oh, wait. Now that I'm thinking about it. Huh, that's interesting. I think it only had shown at the fourth Drexel North Marathon, and I don't think it ended that marathon. Maybe it did. You have the...
Yeah, it ended.
It did end the fourth one.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think that was the last time it had shown before then. It was supposed to show in 1997, and they dropped it to show another Ghidra movie.
Jesus.
Ghidra!
Thanks, Obama.
In any case, marathon still going along pretty well. A couple problems pop up. For one, is the projection. I'd like to read once again from the old Drexel.net film forum. Astral Projection, appropriately enough, who was Mark Fontana, one of the final assistant managers at the Drexel North.
Not Brian Fantana,
no. He says, how about a recap of SF21 for folks like me who couldn't make it? And the first person who posts says, kill the projectionist or give them a hug for their dedication beyond limitation. The next guy who posts says, kill the projectionist. I've never been so frustrated at the technical difficulties encountered during this thon. There were some projection problems. There were some problems with the sound, notably. And I remember, and some out there will say I'm lying, but I remember this specifically, that the excuse that was given for some of the sound problems was, oh, well, you try to play some of those old analog films through digital projectors and through digital sound readers, and it just doesn't work. Okay, well, let me tell you. When you were playing film, there was a way where you could have a digital reader on the film projector, but you could still play analog film. And I don't think that they really did some of their homework beforehand in testing out to make sure everything was fine, because some of the analog prints experienced significant problems. On that same message board, some guy named Joe Neff says, and I quote,
what an ass.
The main problem with the projection situation lies in the Arena Grand's supposed reputation as a premier theater. When you trumpet your THX-certified presentation, you'd better live up to the billing. In the marathon's 3 years at the Grand, there have been far too many projection problems. I worked projection equipment for the last 8 years, which I did.
Yeah, that's like that is the best comeback line from anybody who goes to America. I've worked in a theater.
Yeah, I really wanted to pull that card out. And some of the problems at the theater make me cringe. It's simple stuff like playing the opening credits of Superman in the wrong aspect ratio last year, which they did. That keeps getting muffed. Any sound problems could have been remedied if the staff had merely run some test footage through in the days before the event. Yes, being a projectionist at a 24-hour marathon is not an easy job. However, the myriad problems at the marathons are a clear sign of laziness, ineptitude, and plain just not caring. The work that Bruce and the others put into this and the ticket money that the patrons spend deserves a better reward. That was me, and then someone from the theater responded, and then later I responded again. And I love here's my favorite part of my response to the projectionist. I also realize, as I stated before, that running projection at a 24-hour marathon is difficult. The frustration for me lies in how many of the problems over the past few years have been minor, especially fixable ones, wrong lenses for portions of the films, etc. In 5 years of horror marathons at Studio 35, we had a total of around 5 film breaks of semi-major problems. We also had 1 or 2 projectionists working the entire 24 hours. I think a modest proposal, thank you Jonathan Swift, would be for the Drexel to staff 1 or 2 projectionists solely to handle the marathon screen. This might alleviate some of the problems we speak about. Note how budding genius entrepreneur me says, "It's Studio 35 when we ran things. We never had problems." Drop mic. Thank you.
You know what? I want to say the next podcast, I just want you to read the forum.
That would
live.
Be a lot of fun. We should do an entire podcast
and
devoted
I'll be your
to,
hype
the
man.
To the Serbian film thread.
And I'll be your hype man. I'll be like, that's right.
I like making myself
Word!
Sound like an idiot. Yeah. I do have kind of that Chuck Deist and Torian tone going on when I'm reading my own stupid post from years ago.
That's
okay.
Awesome.
I make fun of myself, but there were projection problems. Now, here is my slightly as objective as I can be thought on what was going on. Mm. Drexel is running Arena Grand. They only do the marathon once a year there. Staff, in part, probably thinks this is a huge pain in the ass because they're there running a multiplex. They're doing other shit.
They're generally, when you, for those who don't know, and I haven't worked in a movie theater, but I have a feeling that's the case. You set up a movie in a house and it runs the entire goddamn week. You don't have to change anything with the projection. Yeah.
Now you're getting into, and back then it was still fairly simple. You were just running film.
Yeah.
But you get into something where someone else is coming in to your place and during an event, even though it's the theater that runs the place doing the event. I think in part that there was probably some communication problems between the organizers and the projection booth.
Yeah.
And I think I still maintain to this day, there were probably some things that could have just easily been solved. But when they add up over time, it gives the appearance that the people running projection are not on top of things. Yeah. And that, you just have to be on top of things. It happens. I will talk about projection problems, I know, later on in future podcasts.
There'll be an entire podcast.
Oh, good Lord. I remember the abominable Dr. Fibe screening where we had to solder the belt to the projector together. I met that girl again today. She works at a local theater, and I have seen her twice in the last couple of years. And I say, wait, where do I know you from? And she pulls out her lighter and shows it to me. And I said, oh, God, that's right. You're the lighter girl. I'm so sorry you had to bail our asses out of that. That's years from now. Anyway, projection, though, was beginning to be a problem. But the other thing that we didn't quite know about behind the scenes was that there was beginning to be some differences of opinion, shall we say, between the Drexel and Nationwide about how to operate the theater.
Yeah.
And also if the marathon could actually exist at the theater. Because running a marathon at the theater, that takes away a big screen for the entire day.
On a weekend.
On a weekend, which can be worked around.
But
owning and operating want to do that. They want to be, they have to want to do that for you. If they don't, it's not fun.
Well, but also if you look at the year of this last one at the Arena Grand, May 1st through May 2nd, 2004, it's not like it is now where in the last 5, 6, pretty much since Iron Man came out in 2008, summer movies start May 1st.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this predates it, but only by 4 years. It was already starting to get there. Like Mission Impossible 3, I think, opened the next year on that first weekend of May. So
yeah, well, and this
it,
is
it was suddenly looking
this was
at
also a, part of the problem in that the date kept bouncing around. If you notice, this SF-19 is April 13th and 14th. SF-20 is April 27th.
Yeah.
SF-21 is May 1st and May 2nd. You would get eventually into some of the Drexel years where you did it at the end of May. To me, the ideal time for a marathon is when we do it right now, which is second or third weekend of March.
Somewhere around spring break.
Or before.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it when you get into weather that's too good.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get it when you're really close to
summer movie
season. It kind of defeats the purpose. Yeah.
Because you're asking the theater to basically give up. arguably going to be what's going to be its biggest screen.
It's one thing we've tried to do lately is set a fairly reliable date for sci-fi, because horror has had a fairly reliable date for
a long
time.
Well, it's going to be October no matter
what. Yeah,
but
it's...
Except for some crazy people who put it in November.
Don't... I have no idea who those people would be. Morons. Morons. Short morons. But unbeknownst to us, there was some conflict about that. And the next year in 2005, we'll talk about that in a future podcast, Marathon was moved back to the Grandview. Mm. And
much smaller
this
house.
Was under the auspices of saying it's becoming difficult for us to put on the marathon at the Arena Grand.
Yeah.
What was also going on was that the relationship between the Drexel and the Arena Grand was beginning to break up. And the Drexel was entering negotiations to run a new theater that Campus Partners was building on the Ohio State campus. That would turn into what was the first version of the Gateway Theater. But as a result of all these things happening, SF21 was the final marathon at the Arena Grand. And it's a really tough proposition when, you know, I look back and I was kind of critical at the time, as I said, about looking at the Arena Grand as the great savior of the marathons.
Yeah.
Even if my criticism should never be equated with trying to poo-poo people's enthusiasm for it, because I'm part of these things. I want to be enthusiastic about the marathons.
Yeah.
And you can't go into the Arena Grand, the theater that you're opening, and just say, well, we'll see how it goes. You have to get people pumped up, and to try to get people pumped up for something like that, to advertise it as the new home of the marathons, yeah, I mean, that's perfectly natural. It's sad in some ways that that relationship broke up. I think there were a lot of good things about the Arena Grand as a venue for this event.
Yeah.
And I think that with time, how should I say this? I think if we had the people who are working on the marathons today with the Arena Grand at their disposal, I think you could do some really cool things. By the way, that's not a knock on the Drexel, the theater. We love being at the Drexel.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there were a lot of things that went on, and it just happens sometimes, you know? And as a result, the venue and the operators just couldn't get together anymore.
Well, and I think the difference is when it was the North, was the Drexel North.
Mm-hmm.
The Drexel was putting them on.
Yes.
At the Drexel.
By themselves.
Yeah, so they didn't have to run it by anybody.
And it was one screen.
Yeah.
The only people they had to run it by was whatever films they were booking for that week.
Yeah.
And manipulating those in some ways.
You weren't dealing with... The more cooks you have stirring a... The more witches you have stirring a brew.
Yeah.
The more difficult.
Most definitely. And people look at the marathons, corporate entities especially would look at them and say, well, you're not making a ton of money.
Yeah.
Which is true. Marathons generally don't make a ton of cash.
You have an 800 seat.
Unless you have an 800. Oh, God. Yeah. Tell me about it. That's the problem in some ways. We talked about this before, and it's interesting when we talk about the marathon. Sometimes I'll do a deal on the website where I'll say, what's your favorite all time marathon? You can tell for the people that participate in the web chats today about the marathons, there is a definite divide between pre-end of the Drexel North and arena post-Arena Grand, like Arena Grand and on. There's a good chunk of the audience who came of age coming to the Arena Grand marathons, and for them, that is the theater. But I still think, too, it is so tough to get over, and I think we're still struggling with this, over leaving the Drexel North when you started the event at a place like that. And you had such control and legacy and the venue and the space was perfect, and you whittle that away over
and
subsequent
the time
years.
And the time that it happened, you know, I mean, in terms of being in the 80s and
very
the
much
90s.
So well, and Boston, for instance, has also been through almost as many theaters as we have.
Yeah.
But the main theaters they've held it at, they had the Orson Welles, which was three screens, but you could fill all three screens at that point.
Yeah.
Then they went to the Somerville, which is huge. Then they went to after a stop, they went to the Coolidge Corner, which had a huge 500, 600 seat main house. And then after another stop or two, they landed back at the Somerville, which is an ornate 900 seat double deck movie palace with phenomenal projection.
Yeah.
When you have that type of continuity where you're able to keep it in theaters that make it look like a huge event,
There
is a psychological difference. Now, the other thing is, that's Boston. Bruce came up with the best comparison I've ever heard, which was the Boston Marathon started in Cambridge in the 70s. The Columbus Marathon started in Clintonville in the 80s. That's a difference in terms of the mindset of a lot of that crowd and the level of loyalty. Well, but it's hard when you reduce the size of the theater after that first huge theater to regain that momentum. And the Arena Grand was a stab at that. The Gateway would be a stab at that.
I remember I've seen some comments just on the site, and I've had people say this to me personally, that they find it entertaining to hear all the stories. When we first started doing these, these stories about the Drexel North, because it is this iconic when it was and when it was at its greatness. And there's so many people now that attend the marathons that didn't exist.
Absolutely.
As marathoids back then. And it's the, you know, there's fewer and fewer and fewer people. And I feel like an old man who's like bemoaning.
I know.
Oh, the movies from the.
It's like Springsteen's glory days. You know, well, this is us. We're characters in that song.
It's like my dad going, oh, I like the old 1940s horror movies with Bela Lugosi and, you know, Boris Karloff. And I'm like, there's a lot of people that.
They have no idea.
Most people nowadays, if they've even seen them, it's all been on video.
I tell you, there are times when. I love the marathons, but as I've said many times before, there are times when running them can be rough.
Yeah.
And it can take up a lot of mental energy, and it can have like just take a psychic toll on you after having to, you know, for 3-4 months keep these things rolling around in your head.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be a pain in the ass, but every time I reach that point where I think, I don't know, let's see what happens, I start thinking back to people like, and this is schmaltzy, but like you and your boys that come.
Yeah.
And then I start getting into the friends I have, and then I get into the acquaintances I have, and then I get into the people like the lighter girl who I saw today at the theater,
yeah.
who was so excited about the, you know, the next horror marathon that's coming up.
Yeah.
And I will always miss the atmosphere of the Drexel North. I don't know that it's possible to regain that in Columbus, but at heart, the venue is important. And if you have a terrible venue, that can really affect it.
Yeah.
But at heart, the marathon, it's about the people.
It is.
The people make the atmosphere. And that's why these people keep coming back today. That's why you have so many people who, for them, Shock Around the Clock or the Sci-Fi Marathon or both, that's the highlight of their year.
Yeah.
Because that's what they want. I put the Facebook invite for the next Shock Around the Clock up on Facebook yesterday. And one of the guys said, oh, I've been waiting for this. This totally makes my day or my week or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have to remember that. I mean, it is the people that make that. I think there are some people, and I fall into this again, some people who come to a marathon and they'll think, well, if there's not a huge guest, it's a failure. Or, oh, if there's not, you know, a ton of really phenomenal premieres, it's not as good. And we try to say this every year, and it sounds like a pitch, and it sounds like a way to try to get people in, and it is kind of. But it's the truth. And that is, it is the people. Some of the best marathons we've had have not been the most spaciously attended. Sci-Fi this past year. Was not a sellout in the Drexel. But let me tell you, that crowd was one of the best crowds I've seen at Sci-Fi in years.
Oh, yeah.
And that did not feel like a crowd that was not a sellout. Horror Marathon last year, there were parts of that before the Satanist, before I killed everybody with that.
well, that wasn't the Satanist.
There were parts of that. Yeah, you know, you're Next and Housebound. The way the crowd united behind those films was great. It is the people that make these things. And that's been hard for Columbus because we went from a huge theater that was perfect and we've whittled it down ever since. But you have to just maintain the fact that, look, these things are about getting together with these people you like don't like and just enjoying 24 hours with them.
Well, and I think it's going to be interesting as I watch my kids grow up. I mean, the marathons can end. Well, there was a period of time where we thought they were, just not too long ago.
Several times, yeah.
Well, and specifically... Not too long.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember saying to my boys, I'm like, I don't know if these are going to continue. I don't know if it's worth the money because for me, it's not just me buying a ticket. I got to buy three.
I threatened not to come that year and I asked for a comp ticket.
Yeah. And it was, and I remember sitting them down and saying, I don't know if we're going to be able to go. And I don't know if these are going to continue because it looks like they're going to completely fall apart. And I mean, my kids were almost in tears.
Yeah.
And I consider and say, well, you know, I mean, I could never go to another marathon again. And I've had my time. I spent my time in high school and college and post college and the years through my 20s and 30s begging my friends to go with me and then being dragged now by my kids. But it'll be interesting to see 15 years from now. My kids will be like, oh, the glory days were the Drexel.
Were the Drexel, yeah. When I won the costume contest as the funky robot. Or
exactly.
Yeah. It you know, that is what always does my heart good, is to know that you might think, oh, this is an event for people who like movies who are older. But to see, like, your sons, granted, they've been warped by you for life.
They're not healthy kids.
They're not. But to see them... That story you tell about them almost being in tears over sci-fi falling apart. And for me, anecdotally, for, you know, horror, I think I notice it a little bit more than sci-fi, but to see some of the young people who have only been there for a few years, to see people like, you know, one of my good friends who we kind of reconnected through the marathons, who you met, she loves those things. God, after sci-fi this year, I was so tired. And one of the highlights for me was seeing something she put on Facebook where she said, this was one of the best 24 hours I've ever spent, essentially.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And that's what keeps me going in a lot of ways is because I get it that, I mean, you know, Bruce and I have always said this, and again, it sounds schmaltzy, but it's true. The reason we keep doing these is for the people.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, we're sitting in a theater by ourselves, and that was Rockpocalypse.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think I went to that one.
But it's for the people, because you do. There is a very special, fantastic thrill that we get from giving an audience a good time like that, and from enriching their lives in some way. And to see young people like that, you know, there are people out there who dig it. There are people who are 18 and 19 or 13, you know, like 14, like your sons.
Yeah.
They get it. They love it. And they it's not just the movies. They come because they like the whole thing. They dig the event. I feel like we're turning this into an extended commercial for the marathons.
Okay.
But this whole thing is...
No one's listening at this point.
No, they tuned out a long time ago. But anyway, so this was a very interesting period for the marathons and for sci-fi in general. And, you know, what happens afterwards was kind of a weird sequel to these years. But first... For the next podcast, we have to get into what might have been the modern high point for the horror marathons. Yeah. Two back-to-back marathons that in their own ways were kind of landmark, one of which today is still my all-time favorite marathon I've ever had anything to do with.
Wow.
But you'll just have to tune in next time.
Was that the one that I was making fun of a Dario Argento movie during?
Oh, yes, Kevin. Of course it was. Kevin, when you make fun of films, it makes the marathon for me. So, thank you guys for listening once again. If you're still tuned in at this point after our extended Glory Days rambling at the end, that puts a cap on the Arena Grand Years. Next time, Nightmare at Studio 35, numbers 4 and 5, when Bruce Campbell and George Romero paid a visit to town.
Boo!
Until then.